Relation NFL Podcast with Matt and Bill Williamson. Matt, you are in Pittsburgh. I want to get to this right away. Six words that probably scare the hell out of the people in the burg. Maybe I don't have it anymore. I'm sure you've been talking about that for 48 hours, huh?
Yeah, it's been brought up. That's needless to say. What's funny
is... I've
never
heard something like that before.
This is the context I think it's been, you know, been brought up as. And I think Steeler fans should hope this is true, is a lot of us have been questioning, you know, how Ben's been playing. You know, in the media, in the Steeler media, a lot of beat reporters, including myself. And there has been talk, you know, obviously with his age, is he nearing the end? You know, and I think there's a lot of evidence to say that he is. Well, apparently when he was being interviewed after the game, Dale Lawley's a good friend of mine, and we do the Steeler show together, and he was right next to Ben whenever he said it, and he said, well, maybe I just don't have it anymore. You know, kind of like, I know I have it. You know, you guys think I don't. But that's the context I was told of how he said it. Like, yeah, maybe I just don't have it anymore. Of course I still have it. You know, is what he was saying. However,
so
you know what I mean?
Like, kind of saying, screw you, I have it, you know.
Right. Like, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I don't have it. But, if, you know, deep down saying, like, yeah, of course I still am great. Which I hope that's the way he does perceive himself. Because if you lose that athletic arrogance, I think half the battle is already shot. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have that to get on the field to do what they do. However, you know, I mean, there's also a theory, you know, that it keeps going back to Chuck Knoll saying, if you're talking about retirement, you might as well already be there, you know, and times have changed. All these guys that are 30 up think about retirement every year. I mean, I think it's crazy not to think about retirement if you're Rivers, Eli, Breeze, all these guys year to year. But you wonder, what if he is 5% less dedicated or, you know, is thinking about it more, that it's really a real thing for him. It could be the difference. I mean, he certainly is not playing well, and I know it's really come to the forefront this week because he threw 5 picks, but I think he's played at that level the entire season, and this week he got a little unluckier than others and threw more interceptions, but that's who he's been all year.
Yeah. You know, yeah, it's interesting because the words, I haven't heard it in that context. Every time I heard about it, it was just those words. But,
yeah.
I mean, depending on how a guy says, he can be sarcastic in answering a question. So I think that's very important for people to know. But, yeah, the 5 interceptions is a problem. I mean, the 5 interceptions and continuing a slump is probably a bigger problem than those 6 words, right?
Absolutely. And he can joke and act tough and say he has it all he wants, but his play isn't showing it.
Right. Right. And here's another thing. Today he kind of defended his thoughts, I think, and said, oh, of course I feel like I'm one of the best. So it's just something we're going to have to keep an eye on, I think. And it's certainly you every day, right?
Yeah, and to be honest, I was kind of out ahead of this, and, you know, that I've been saying it before most people in the media that, you know, what's wrong with the Steelers' offense? And I keep saying the quarterback's not playing well enough. It's not the only problem, but it's a problem, and we know that can sink all ships in an offense. You know, he's hurting. He's more of a liability than an asset right now.
They're gluckier in that division, right?
I'm sorry, what's that?
They're lucky they're in that division, aren't they?
Right now, but you look at Cincinnati's schedule, it's not real hard. They're playing a little bit better. I mean, it used to be a foregone conclusion that the Steelers are going to win this thing. They keep playing like this, it's not a foregone conclusion. I think all of us would still put a chip in Pittsburgh's favor that they're going to win the division, but they are playing like a very mediocre team.
Right, yep. Well, we are recording, it is about, 12:35 East Coast time right now. And there was a trade in the NFL this morning. I don't know if it's a big trade, certainly a big name, but Adrian Peterson to the Arizona Cardinals. Just happened. What's your initial thoughts?
Makes a lot of sense. The Cardinals don't have anyone that they can hand the ball to with some regularity. their offense is an old school throw it down the field, little bit more throwbackish type of a group, you know, that obviously they threw to David Johnson a very, very high percentage of the time and with a great, great success last year. But I do think that they could be, you know, Arians could easily adapt to a lot more seven-step drops, a lot of Peterson on early downs, pound the ball, play action. I guess I get it. I mean, they said it was an undisclosed draft pick. I assume that's like a seventh rounder. I mean, I don't think they gave up a lot for him, that's for sure. But I think the Saints aren't happy that he's gone. But he never fit there at all. And I don't know if he's washed up or not yet either. I mean, usually it's something I've been saying all week about Ben is I think quarterback's the hardest position to see if a guy's washed up. You know, like running backs, you see, like, he can't get out of anyone's way. I don't know if Peter – we haven't seen enough of him to make that decision. So I think we'll at least see him featured in Arizona. And I think it really opens the door for Kamara and Ingram, who I think they love. I mean, I think they love Kamara.
Right. To me, there's three things that stand out. One is kudos to the Saints to realizing, hey, it's okay to make a move, not work out, and move on. And usually when this happens, they cut players, teams do. So for them to get anything for Peterson is good. You know, good deal for them, good flip. He was only a Saint for a few months. Another thing is the Cardinals are clearly just playing for the next few months. I mean, now they have another old guy on the team and in their offensive skill positions. So they're not going anywhere. They're just trying to survive the schedule. And the third thing is, I think people are excited about this trade because it's Adrian Peterson's name, but it's his game is not equaling his name at this point of his career. So I don't think it's all that big a deal. I don't think we're going to say, oh, man, that really ignited the Cardinals. You know what I mean?
Like
I
all of a sudden,
it's an old guy getting traded at this point.
Yeah, that nobody else wants. It's the reality of it. I don't think it's like, boy, the Cardinals are going to be 11-5 now. You know, like, and Peterson's going to rush for 1,000 yards. No, I don't think that at all. I think it's a lot more along the lines of Emmett Smith's last days in Arizona or Franco Harris in Seattle. You know, I mean, this O.J. Simpson is a Niner. You know, like, it was great career, Hall of Famer. And my son will say, oh, he played for the Saints? Oh, he was a Cardinal? I didn't remember that.
I love that, by the way. That's one of my favorite things is when old guys go to, you know, like you said, O.J. Simpson and the Niners, you know. I remember that my dad, I'm like, Duke Snyder was a Giant, you know, going to baseball. It's just
Willie Mays
with the Mets. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's great.
Namath played for the Rams.
Yeah, exactly. Brett Favre, who goes from the Packers to the Jets, pretty nondescript of the Jets, and then has a late spark with the Vikings. So people will forget that Jets part of Brett Favre's career.
Yeah. Kurt Warner with the Giants.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great example. Great example. Let's go to Monday Night Football. Were you for lack of a better word, offended as much as a lot of people were by Zimmer keeping in Bradford?
Yeah. I mean, I sent a tweet out or two like, what the hell? Let's get this guy out of the game. You know what I mean? Like, why can't you see it while the rest of the world can? And I think it was RG3 that I didn't know he was on Twitter. A bunch of people retweeted him saying something along the lines of, you have to get him out. He can't defend himself. And that's the key is it's different if you're out there with a bad finger and you're just not throwing the ball well enough, like Stafford at the end of last year. But if you're afraid for your well-being because you can't defend yourself out there, you got to get him out, man.
Right. Yeah. I just don't know what the head coach is thinking there. And it's not like Case Keenum was not giving them a chance at all.
No, right. They won games with them.
And they won the game. So are you just going to further mess up Bradford's career? And I think the thing that we all know about Sam Bradford and his career is that sometimes he gets a little glum and the injuries have gotten to him mentally. So why put him through that?
Right. Like, it was a bad look, that's for sure. I wonder now, you know, is he going to throw him right back in there next week and he'll be fine? Or did he make it worse? Or is he even more tentative? And, you know, I'm really getting exaggerating here, but, you know, him and Teddy Bridgewater are free agents after the year. You know, like, you would think they'd pick Bradford, but if he's, you know, a little damaged physically and mentally, maybe they don't. I don't know. I mean, it's just, where do we go from here with Bradford and the Vikes?
Right. Right. Yeah, they may have, you know, won the battle last night by winning the game, but, you know, the war is still there to be won for them. You know what I mean? That may
right.
not have been a banner night for that organization.
They might look back on week five and say, man, we really screwed things up.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on the rookie quarterback for the Bears? Certainly a hell of a two-point converter.
That was the best play I've ever seen. I loved it. That was fun.
Yeah.
And it does kind of amaze me. NFL coaches are so damn boring. I mean, why not do more of that kind of stuff? No one ever sees it coming. It's not that hard to execute. What's the chances of getting somebody hurt? Or, you know, have some fun plays out there like you see in college. I don't know, he kind of was what I thought he was, you know, and that I mean that in a good way. That there was a lot of times that I felt like him and Howard and to some degree the line were the only competent things on the field for the Bears, and that's, you know, a vote of confidence for him. I mean, he seemed to have some leadership qualities. They obviously designed the offense around him. You know, I sent out a tweet saying, boy, Jordan Howard's a really good zone runner, and Trubisky might be a perfect fit too. You know, that play action off that outside zone, roll out the other way, get it out quick, half field reads, good athlete, accurate. It's a real good start. You know, I mean, I think he's kind of took it where we left off in the preseason, unlike somebody like Kaiser. But the weapons, the receivers are just so terrible.
Right, right. But if he has to look like the game wasn't too big to him, and he has to look like he could be a good player, and that's really the bottom line for the Bears this season, right? I don't know if it's their record. If they get into this offseason knowing Trubisky is their quarterback of the future, that's a successful year for them.
Right, right. I mean, I think if you're a Bears fan, you say, you know, they showed that graphic that they went through, I don't know, 30s quarterbacks or whatever since Jim McMahon, you know, and only the Browns have had more, and Bears fans have had to endure that year after year. And I think you could say right now, if you're a Bears fan, I think there's a pretty good chance we have our long-term guy here, you know, and he may look terrible next week, but, and then you think about it and you say, this defense is pretty good. We can run the ball. Let's say we sign Allen Robinson this offseason and use a second round pick on a wide receiver. We might be okay.
Yeah, and it's I'm glad you brought up the Browns, because they're the anti-Bears so far this year, is that they give their young quarterback a chance. And if the Bears were to go 3-13 and Kaiser looked like he was the guy, the program would be sparked, but it's not. Because, you know, it's still probably going to have to answer their quarterback in the offseason. I want to mention, I thought Myles Garrett, at least that's a bright spot for the Browns. They finally got him on the field and he gets two sacks right away. That's exactly what they need, at least on defense, right?
Yeah, and so I'm glad you brought up the Browns, because I just turned in an article about Kaiser, and I thought, and basically my big picture thoughts on the Browns are, you guys should be better than this at this point. You know, Hugh Jackson is 1-20 as the head coach, but I do think there's two bright spots in that, well, I mean, young ones. I think Garrett, like you said, and Njoku keeps showing up week after week, too, and flashing, and you see the ability, and you look at him and say, I could see him being a star down the road. But in my article was kind of where they are with Kaiser, and I'm not defending him. People know that I was high on him coming out. He has not played well. He has not justified where I thought he would be. However, awful weapons. They don't run the ball a high percentage of the time, which makes zero sense to me. And the worst part, and I understand this eventually might be what he is, but Hugh Jackson is asking an awful lot from him. I mean, seven-step drops, long developing routes, reading the whole field. There's much, much more on his plate than Watson or Trubisky or maybe even Goff. You know, like, I don't understand why they're It's almost like they're putting him in a position not to succeed. Like, this is high level quarterbacking they're asking of him with a bad supporting cast, and it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, what do you expect them to do?
Yeah, and I mean, I got two responses to that. Is maybe that he's just trying, he knows it's a lottery ticket, and he's just seeing if he could be his guy. If not, he'll figure it out later. And another thing is, I think Hugh Jackson doesn't play around. He's a really confident offensive coach that is going to give his full weapon. You know, he's going to make his quarterback do the whole deal, I think. So that's how I look at it. I don't know if I'd said that very, you know, intelligently or not, but I think Hugh Jackson is of the mind that you can either do it or you're not going to do it.
And I can understand that, you know, if we're going to throw him into a college-level course, even though he's a 16-year-old kid, but he's really smart, you know. So if you can do it, great. And, you know, if you can, I'm fine with that approach. I mean, it's a risky one. It's a hard one. It's a big hill. But in order to do that approach, you have to realize you can't pull him. When he has to be the guy. You're married to him then. That, you know, if you're going to put him in this hard level class, you can't put Hogan in. You know what I mean? Like, and my thoughts when I keep seeing Hogan in there are, Hogan's better than Kaiser right now, and Hogan gives him a better chance to win. And that makes me wonder if Hugh is starting to worry about his job security. You know, like 1-20 is not looking good, and we all knew this Browns thing was going to take a lot of time. And a year ago, they had the worst roster I've ever seen. But if ownership's putting pressure on them, I wonder if they don't follow through. We know they're not the most patient organization.
Right. We, you know, we're 15 minutes into the show, and we haven't talked about two just gut-wrenching injuries, Odell Beckham and J.J. Watt out for the year. And, you know, we talk about injuries every week, and we just say how bad it sucks. And these are two really sucky injuries, huh? I mean, losing superstars.
Yeah, I mean, the Watt one for many reasons. You know, first of all, obviously, he's the most popular guy in Houston in terrible times and is really gone out of his way to help the city in a really rough situation, obviously. But then from a football perspective, you look at it and say, you know, he just got off a massive injury and he was starting to really round into shape. And he's potentially the best defensive player we've ever seen. Is he ever going to be the same? You know, is he Gale Sayers? You know, I mean, and oh, by the way, really hurts Houston's chances this year, even though they're in an easy division. And they lost Merciless. Yeah, I mean, that, no one even talks about that, but he's a Pro Bowl type guy, too.
Yeah, underrated guy, for sure.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, you used to think, boy, they got Merciless, Watt, and Clowney up front. This is going to be a handful. Now they've lost two of those three.
Is Clowney having a good year? Maybe I should know that, but I don't, you know.
Funny you ask, because I don't really know either. You know, I mean, I don't think he's been a liability out there. I mean, I've watched him, and he does make plays, and he certainly has big play potential. As a big picture thought, I mean, I think he's a little overrated. You know, that I don't think he's as fluid or as flexible or as, you know, explosive as some of the Khalil Mack, Von Miller, Justin Houston types. You know, I mean, they use him between the tackles more than people realize. And he is a really good player, but he's a little bit straight line. I don't know. I would have to say middle of the road, but I kind of have to look into that too, which is weird. I mean, usually you just kind of know those things off the top of your head.
Yeah. I mean, and he was coming on last year, and he was healthy. And it'd be like, man, this guy's making plays. And because he's finally healthy, he's been healthy this year. I just haven't heard his name much. And maybe that's my fault. I don't know. But let's get back to Watt. I did a story for FanRag yesterday. I talked to Shannon Sharp, Hall of Famer, of course, and a few NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame voters. And the question is, has he done enough? If his days as a productive NFL player are behind him, and I think it's a fair question, after going out 2 years in a row early with serious injuries, you know, He's going to be 29 next year. Maybe he doesn't come back and produce. Maybe, you know, who knows? But in his 5 years of production, has he done enough to become a Hall of Famer? And, you know, most of the answers were yes. Shannon Sharpe was a resounding yes. He said he's him and Lawrence Taylor are the best players on defense he's ever seen. And, I mean, what's your thoughts? Has he done enough?
For me, yes. You know, and I mentioned Gale Sayers earlier. And obviously, I didn't see Gale Sayers play every game. But it's a similar situation. Or Terrell Davis. And I don't think Davis belongs. But I think if you're that elite, I mean, he has three defensive MVP awards. I mean, that's pretty crazy. I mean, how many guys do we know that won three in a row MVPs on either side of the ball? I mean, just clearly the best player on the entire side of the ball year after year. You know, that's really something that, for me. I had somewhere else to go with that, and I don't remember where it is. But, yeah, I do think he is a very deserved Hall of Famer. And I do think he's right there with LT and Reggie White and the all-time best defensive players we've seen.
The thing about him is he had so many, like, blow-up-the-world plays, you know? Like, oh, my God. And they're also impactful, and, you know, I mean, and that's what you want from your defensive difference makers, is changing the game, you know, and making everybody notice your number out of the 22. And that's what I think made him special.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you watch coach's tape before his back injury, there were times where the opponent would scheme it up that they would have three blockers on him. I mean, and he still would get through sometimes. You know, it wasn't like he was totally shut out either. You know, like the opponent knew who he was and had to get him blocked, and they still couldn't do it. The other thing I wanted to mention, though, is as I heard somebody, I like Pro Football Focus, but, you know, I have mixed feelings on it. But I guess Watt in his prime basically broke their system. Like, they didn't think it was conceivable to have someone grade as well as he consistently did. So that if he was 100 out of 100, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but the next guy would have to be like an 80 or a 60 or something, you know, to make the numbers work. Like, he broke their system.
Wow. Grading on the J.J. Watt curve, huh?
Right. Like, he just is so much further ahead than number two.
Yeah, amazing. Now, Odell Beckham Jr., he's a guy who, I mean, he has a long way to go. But he's a guy who has Hall of Fame potential, I think. And that just sucks for him being out for the rest of the year. And obviously the Giants are going nowhere. And, I saw somebody tweet the other day, you know, at the beginning of the year, we thought maybe the New York team that would get the number one pick and the rookie quarterback would be the Jets. But now it's looking like it might be the Giants. Giants are 0-5. And, I mean, I don't see that turning around without their star, you know, receiver. And Brandon Marshall, I know he didn't have a great year, but he's out for the year too.
Right. There's a lot of problems there, obviously. The defense hasn't been quite as good as last year. They were very healthy last year. That clearly isn't the case. I thought Eli was a big problem a year ago and remains so. They took the approach this offseason of we're going to add pass catchers instead of blockers. That philosophy hasn't worked out. They still don't run the ball very well. And we've seen in the past, and even this year, there are two different offenses with and without Beckham. You know, that he's that good, and I do think he's on a Hall of Fame pace. And you would hope that, you know, when we look back 10 years from now and we capitalize Odell's, you know, career, this was a speed bump, and he gets right back on it and scores 12 touchdowns next year and is a great player for, you know, the rest of his career. In a way, this could be a blessing, though, you know, that they're 0-5, but I don't think any of us think they're playing like an 0-5 team. You know, like the Browns are 0-5, and they've earned it. And the Niners are 0-5, but they've been close in games, but they don't have a lot of talent. I mean, the Giants are, if they played a round-robin tournament between those three teams, the Giants would crush them. You know, I mean, they would win those games. They've just won a lot of close, tough games, or they've lost a lot of close, tough games. And at this point, you know, they're probably on pace to be a 4-12 type of team. And it might be, you might, they might look at that, you know, that blip in the radar of the Giants, you know, legacy and say, Well, that's where they end up getting Sam Darnold, and we got right back on it. You know, I mean, I'm not a believer in tanking, so to speak, but I think you have to think that maybe there in that quarterback bowl, like you said, is a top five type of pick.
Yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, I just don't know. I know they're not an 0-16 type team, but, I mean, they're going to, I don't know if they get to four wins. I don't know if they, you know, if they go 4-7 the rest of the way. I mean, so the Giants are going to have a high pick either way.
Yeah, 4-7 seems like a
winning team. Yeah, a couple winning teams now. To me, the Carolina Panthers are quietly 4-1. You know what I mean? It's like we've talked about them not really impressing us very much, but now that you look at their record, and they're 4-1.
Yeah, last Tuesday on my Locked On NFL podcast, I did a power ranks, and I clearly put Kansas City 1, and then I've been on this big spiel about who's number 2. You know, please give me a case for anyone to be number 2. I put the Steelers at 2, you know, and that looks dumb after they just got washed by the Jags. But then I put Carolina at 3, and I picked them to win their division, and it has been kind of quiet, and I got a lot of heat for people, like, how can you put Carolina ahead of Green Bay and Atlanta and some of these other teams? And I'm like, Cam looks a lot better, and he looks even better this past week since then. I very much trust the defense, especially the front seven. I think they're well coached. Guys like Funchess and Benjamin and now Dixon are all stepping up, and McCaffrey's a nice little addition. It's kind of by default, but they're going to be 2 this week for me. I mean, they're a good team.
Yeah. And Cam was good again, right? And so maybe he shook that rust off, because he's had a good 2 last weeks.
Yeah, and he's driving the football down the field and throwing with velocity and playing with a little more aggression. And I know, you know, I watched that week when he looked good against the Patriots. And at that point, the Patriots were letting up a ton of points to everybody. And people were like, don't overreact to that, Matt. Cam's playing the Patriots. The Patriots are terrible. I said, well, if you just isolate the quarterback and just watch Cam, the first time he looked like himself in a while. And I think this past week he did too.
Yeah. You know, the NFC, there's going to be some real intrigue in the NFC. The Packers, a team that I wasn't in love with because of the defense, they're 4-1 too. And, you
I'm
know,
really excited for Eagles. I'm excited for Eagles-Panthers Thursday night.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to see it Thursday night because it's in 2 days, and it's better than what we usually get on Thursday night. But wouldn't that game be better if it was a Sunday because it's, you know, the
yeah.
full week rest?
Yeah, if one of those teams comes out and looks poor, I'm not going to all of a sudden say, oh, the Eagles were a pretender. You know, I wonder that we won't learn what we need to learn from that game.
I'm really, really liking the Eagles. I think they may go on a long run.
I do, too. And I picked them to win their division. I love Wentz. I thought their defense would be really good, except at the corner position. And I was right about those things. But I didn't see them running the ball like they did. I mean, they stick with it. And they, even though they don't have great backs, they run the ball consistently. I didn't think that would be the case. Their offensive line is playing really well. I really think Wentz is going to be a star, too.
I think he's going to be in January. And, yeah, I think he's going to be playing football in January. I think he's going to be so much better than he is right now. You know what I mean? I think he's just going to get better and better and better. And we may see some real signature performances from him this winter.
Yeah, and I love Carr and Winston and Mariota, and I'm excited about Goff and Dak, and you know, there's a nice little crop of those guys, you know, a couple of early, you know, young 20s something next generation quarterbacks, but I'll take Wentz over all of them.
Yeah, I'd have to think about that, but he would certainly be in my, you know, my final 2 for sure. Let's take a moment just to praise Aaron Rodgers for a second. Don't have to do it very long, but good God. I mean, once again.
I mean, I say the same things about him all the time, and I'm sure people that have followed me over the years know what's about to come out of my mouth. But if we line them all up, you know, Unitas, Montana, Elway, I'm pretty sure if I have the first pick in the draft, I'm taking Rodgers. I mean, I don't want to play against him. I don't see weaknesses. I've never seen anyone like him at the hardest position in sports. He did it yet again and makes it look easy. With all respect to Brady, I mean, I want Rodgers. And the thing I always say about him, and I probably have said this on the show two or three times, is all the great quarterbacks ever, you know, like, give me their highlight tape and be like, wow, you know, Rodgers is about as good as any. You know, it's right there with Favre or Elway or, you know, like, that's an unbelievable highlight tape. But give me his low light tape too. His worst 50 throws of his career. It might be the best one of all. You know, like Favre's is nasty. You know, like there's no lows.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's the key. And we have talked about that before, but I don't care. I mean, if we got a guy in the now who you think you would draft number one ever, I think we talk about as much as we can. And Aaron Rodgers, I think everybody knew, including the Dallas Cowboys, including everybody in that stadium, that Aaron Rodgers was going to win that game with a minute left. It was just, how is he going to do it?
Absolutely. Right. You know, like, it almost, you know, Dak is going into the end zone, and part of me's thinking, dude, take a knee at the one and eat more clock, because this isn't going to end well.
Yeah. Moving on, just a few more topics. Let's stick with a quarterback because I can move on to a couple other quick things. I think Kirk Cousins deserves some credit for, you know, a lot of people say, oh, man, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him this year. But he's playing pretty well in this contract year, in this really weird contract year. Don't you think? I mean, I just kind of thought about that yesterday because I, you know, did a little bit of the thing that he's going to be facing the 49ers this week and the team that he's been connected to for months and months and months, and how much it's going to be talked about this week. But this dude is really handling the pressure and is playing pretty well.
Yeah, he really is. And he's a little bit out of sight, out of mind because they didn't play this week. But the team in general has certainly exceeded my expectations. I think they're well coached. You know, the defense is better than I thought.
I don't think you expected that.
No, I mean, they're highly competitive against anyone. I mean, they're a top 10 team for sure, in my opinion. They don't have noticeable weaknesses. Cousins seems to keep getting better. You know, I mean, I hammered him early in his career because my big thing with him was, if you remember, like his first 20, 25 games, something like that, he was on the pace to throw the most interceptions ever. I mean, he turned the ball over at an insane amount for the first 2 years or so of his career. And that's okay if you're Brett Favre. It's not okay, but it's, you know, a little more acceptable if you're a superstar talent, kind of like we were talking about earlier with great quarterbacks. And he wasn't. But he's really cut down on that, and he still makes nice, you know, big throws as well. He's a quality player.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's going to get paid big, big, big money.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, I would imagine.
And cool, he deserves it. It's great.
Right, right. I mean, I hope that keeps up and it doesn't end up being a Flacco handcuffing your team type contract. But, I mean, if you insert him in San Francisco and with a, you know, a really high pick, they draft a great receiver or they sign Allen Robinson or, you know, like, or imagine him in Cleveland right now or, you know, or Jacksonville. I mean, the Jags would be a really good team if he was their quarterback.
Oh, a really good team, yeah. And that's the team I actually want to talk about. Jacksonville's defense. Top three defense? I mean, I hear some people talk about it maybe the best in the league right now.
Yeah, I think it's in that neighborhood for sure. A lot of ability, a lot of speed. You know, if we were having a draft right now of you could pick every defensive player in the league, Jalen Ramsey would be a top three or four type of pick for me. You know, when you consider youth, you know, that type of deal. I think he's on a Hall of Fame pace too, you know, like a Beckham.
Already, you know, that's something.
I really think he's going to be, you know, I think he's right behind Patrick Peterson right now as the best corner, and you know, he hasn't played that much. I mean, it's all ahead of him. you know, we talked. I analyzed them to death this past week going into the Steeler game, of course. And the numbers said they're the best pass defense in the league and at the very bottom of the league in run defense. And I kept telling people around here, I'm like, yeah, but the tape doesn't show that. You know, they've it's a small sample size. They've allowed a couple big runs. Last week, Bilal Powell falls down, and everyone thought he was down. He gets up and runs 60 yards or whatever. But still, the Steelers didn't attack them on the ground, though. I mean, like, that made me crazy, and I've been analyzing that like crazy from a Steeler perspective. Is Ben threw way too many passes, considering the way he's playing, that they kind of played right into the Jags' hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So you really think Ramsey is on the Hall of Fame track already? I'm not questioning
it. I mean, it's only a year and a half, or it's only 20 games, but I think he's that type of player that he'll be, you know, one of the best, absolute best corners in the league for the next 10 years and already is, and is as gifted as anyone not named Patrick Peterson. You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think he's a total stud. And if he was a New Yorker, we'd all know about it.
Right, and Miles Jack is playing well too, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. You know that they're really active on the second level. Telvin Smith's a really good player that nobody talks about. They can really run. Calais Campbell's been a great addition. Another star in the making that no one knows about is Ndokwe, their third round pick last year. He's a really talented guy. You know, they've invested heavily on defense and they're getting their money's worth.
And how's Fowler doing? Not bad, right?
Not bad, yeah. I mean, the best season of his career. He's been disappointing up till now. Showing promise, put it that way.
Yeah.
Malik Jackson's really good, too.
Right.
And Bouye, yeah.
Yeah, they're stacked, no doubt about it. Let's close out the show talking about a team that we've been kind of hard on this year, and I thought really showed up and made, you know, cliche, but made a statement, was the Seattle Seahawks. You know, the Rams are averaging 35 points a game in their wins. They've held them to 10 points. And the Seahawks really needed that win to show the Rams, hey, well, now we're going to be tied with you, but this is still our division. You still have to go through us. We'll see you in Seattle in week 15.
Yeah, and they may see him again after that. I mean, I really think these teams – watching that game, I thought that these were pretty evenly matched teams, you know, that – we talked about the best defense in the league. I still think Seattle's in that conversation. You know, they still have a lot of star power everywhere you look. And Earl Thomas being back is gigantic from a year ago. But they got a lot of concerns on the other side of the ball, too. You know, that they're really up and down and they don't run the ball and the line's a problem, of course. In a way, I kind of thought it was a moral victory for the Rams almost, that you can hang toe-to-toe with Seattle. And I guess you could look at it the way you said, too, that – we're still big brother. You know, we still pushed you down a little. But there was two or three plays that could have gone either way, and, you know, the Rams could have got that win. It was close from start to finish. My least favorite rule in football happened in that game. I don't know if you saw it, but Gurley's going into the end zone, reaches out, and the ball, you know, the ball fumbles into the end zone and goes out of the end zone. I mean, we've seen this a million times. And it's a touchback for the defense. Like, I don't understand what the Seahawks did to deserve the football. You know, like, I think we've talked about this before, but that makes me crazy that the Rams should have it where he fumbled the ball at the one. You know, like, he's reaching out, it hits the pylon or whatever and comes out of his hands, and all of a sudden they lose possession of the ball. I mean, it's like a 10-point swing. I mean, it's a gigantic play. And Seattle did nothing to deserve the football. I mean, it makes me crazy in this league.
Yeah, yeah. So your overall point is the Rams could have won that game and they hung in there. And that's,
yeah.
And it's good for them, yeah. But I didn't see a whole lot of it, but it seemed like it was a pretty good football game.
Yeah. I mean, physical game, I could see that developing into a rivalry. Two young quarterbacks, organizations that are pretty strong. I believe in the Rams. I mean, I think they have some defensive questions, and this wasn't Gurley's best day, but Seattle's D is really good.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, hey, great show, Matt. Appreciate it. We will talk next week after week 6. Thanks, everybody, for listening to No Relation NFL Podcast with Matt and Bill Williamson. Matt, talk to you soon.
Absolutely, bud.